Have your say in ExchangeWise Industry Review APAC, our in-depth view of the hottest issues impacting the region. Comment on one of six topics: walled gardens, gaming, retail media, the service layer, the open web and CTV, and join ExchangeWire in driving the industry forward. Email info@exchangewire.com to get involved.
The MadTech Podcast, news of the week in ad tech and marketing tech, brought to you by ExchangeWire.
Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of ExchangeWire's MadTech Podcast. My name is Anne-Marie Sheedy, CRO at ExchangeWire, and I am your host this week. I'm really pleased to be joined by my colleague, Matt Broughton, Senior Editor at ExchangeWire. Hello, Matt.
Hello, Anne-Marie. How are you?
Very well, thank you. And our special guest this week, Janine Leo, Head of Marketing at Honor Germany. Hello and welcome, Janine.
Hello, Anne-Marie. Hi, Matt. Nice to meet you in the podcast. And for everyone, I'm Janine. I'm heading marketing at Honor. My goal at Honor is to reposition our brand into a premium iconic brand in German-speaking market. Nice to talk to you guys today.
Excellent. Thank you. Well, we have three interesting stories to discuss, so let's dive straight in. The first is about Google pushing cookie deprecation back to 2024. So, Google has pushed back sunsetting third-party cookies until the end of 2024. The tech giant had previously postponed deprecating the tracking technology from 2022 until mid-2023, but have now announced a further delay to give advertisers more time to test the solution that will replace cookies on Chrome. The solution referred to in this instance is part of the company's privacy sandbox. The Alphabet subsidiary initially held off on removing cookies in part due to regulatory scrutiny with both the DOJ in the US and the UK's CMA investigating the privacy sandbox's potential to entrench Google's dominance in online advertising. Google agreed to have their work on the suite of post-cookie solutions supervised by the CMA, and VP of the Privacy Sandbox, Anthony Chavez, said that the decision to delay further is in accord with the CMA's order that Privacy Sandbox provides effective, privacy-preserving technologies, and the industry has sufficient time to adopt these new solutions. Now, Janine, I'd like to come to you first. In your opinion, was this delay inevitable?
To be very honest, this come as no surprise at all. Mm. Because if you think about like the programmatic ecosystem become more complicated since 2009 as it launched. And nowadays, if you want to change the whole complex industry into more privacy first approach, it needs to fulfill all the needs of advertiser, consumers, legal department, and also developer as well. There's a lot of party included, and there's a lot of business interest in that as well. Also, of course, Google want to protect their ad business, not just make a Chrome business to be happy. So this is more or less expected. But I think most importantly for the industry, we should not stop funding an innovation way to have a privacy first approach. To use targeting and also to provide user experience across different channels. Because nowadays, the consumer has more power to make the decision how the user experience look like. It is our job to make sure that they feel perfectly safe. It is our job that we still provide them that user experience based on less data possibly that happening. And on the other hand, of course, it gives us as advertisers and also publisher more time to test out the solution. What is the right one? Because we all talk about ID-based solution or contextual-based solution. There's disadvantages or advantages about this. But doing just 350 topics, what Google support is not the way, because it remember like 15 years ago as a targeting specialist to do to program a targeting system. This is not the way to go back. We should move forward. Just need to mind ourselves that we need to have privacy first approach.
Yeah, definitely. Totally agree. And I'm sure, Matt, I can't imagine your thoughts are much different, but please do share.
No, exactly. They're pretty much exactly the same. Looking at the cold light of day, it was inevitable that they'd have to push it back, given that they're facing the double pressures that they had to kill off Flock at the start of the year. Not that I'm necessarily a fan of topics either, as Janine said, it's very, very limited in its capability so far. And obviously they're under scrutiny from, you know, these competition and regulatory authorities. It's a no-brainer that they had to give the market more lead time in terms of that testing. And again, agreeing with Janine, in an ideal world, it should have zero effect on development and testing and adoption of cookieless solutions. You know, Safari and Firefox, they're not, you know, wastelands devoid of users. And user privacy controls, regardless of what's going on in cookies, they're being strengthened all the time as Google's trying to show that it's you know, protecting user privacy in line with what Apple's doing. So, you know, at the moment, inventory on Chrome amounts to, you know, around 30% of the open web. That's likely to decline as the years progress towards that deprecation, even though it is delayed. It's quite a crude measure, but I'm delighted to see so many of the industry, you know, on places like LinkedIn, shouting about, you know, how it shouldn't delay the adoption of these solutions, and that, you know, the time for development and experimentation is now. And there's a lot more, I think, people saying that compared to the last delay. So I think everyone's on message. And yeah, I think clinging to cookies is, you know, if we go back to 2007, it's like adamantly focusing your entire business on making VHS tapes. The rest of the world has already moved on to DVDs. Streaming is coming in. So yes, you will have to start making DVDs, but at the same time, why are you clutching on to a dying format?
Wow. Okay. So, I mean, there's a lot in there, and to try and break it up, you know, you both talked about all the different players in the ecosystem and the impact it's going to have. But if we're going to kind of explore that conversation in terms of the development and adoption of the cookieless solutions, can we look at perhaps the advertisers first? So I would say that they're happy. They can continue to measure their activity in Chrome. If we asked Google, and we're fortunate enough to get a response, I reckon they would say they are protecting smaller advertisers. What are your thoughts on that? I'm coming to you, Janine, please.
I don't think they are trying to protect the smaller advertiser. I would think that actually they try to protect the publisher side more than the advertiser. If you think about the scale of how they test, actually they are testing the developer, they're working with the publisher, but there's not really a scale to test with us as advertiser. So meaning that I don't feel that as an advertiser we have been heard. If we have been heard, it is not just about testing topics. In the advertising space nowadays, frequency become more important, retargeting is also important, and also the customer lifecycle is also important. All these things are missed. And so I think as an advertiser, I don't see that we are embraced really. And even regarding privacy, it is also not very transparent for us how we as advertiser can use the new solution, the new privacy sandbox to provide a privacy control over the consumer, which is more important for advertiser nowadays because all the consumer knows the way how to complain to the advertiser if they don't feel privacy safe.
True. And I agree with you from the publisher's perspective, but I think that's perhaps maybe short term. It's probably a good thing because they've perhaps not done enough to get ready for life without the cookie. But in the long term, surely it would be better for them as it would give them a larger slice of the pie.
Definitely.
Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of building on Janine's point, I would want to see that engagement from Google towards the advertiser side. And I think it's very important for the regulatory bodies such as the CMA to make sure that they recognise that, you know, it's obviously very important and good that they're examining Google, but they should also recognise that inertia and not allowing the market to test these solutions could also be hugely damaging, especially for you know, the smaller advertisers. So yeah, I think that dialogue should definitely continue, and yeah, basically they should open it up as soon as possible for testing so that advertisers can understand what the capabilities of the platform are so that they can obviously test alternatives as needed.
That's really interesting because depending on, you know, what you read and where you read it, they there's been some criticism in terms of them not opening up, not sharing, not giving people the opportunity kind of to dig in and protect, perhaps, you know, I'm curious to know your thoughts around tech companies. You know, I would say it's tough for those who've invested in alternative solutions and for their clients. They no longer have the advantage that perhaps they'd hoped for, but they, I think, will still succeed in Safari and other areas. But in reality, I think it puts them in a tough position. You know, they were primed and ready to go. And now what are they going to do for the next couple of years? Do either of you have any thoughts on that?
So from my perspective, I'd probably counter that by saying they probably do still have an advantage, because obviously Google, in terms of topics, it's probably a lot less than what's available in terms of other contextual solutions currently on the market. So yes, companies, you know, in terms of tech vendors, they could still obviously have the cookie-based solutions, and obviously the attribution around that. But as I mentioned, that portion of Chrome on the open web is still declining. And importantly, the announcement they made in terms of the delay, it didn't mention anything about the planned rollout of Privacy Sandbox on Android. So that still may be progressing as planned, which obviously will affect a huge proportion of mobile inventory. So that, you know, again, that testing and development of cookie-less solutions still needs to continue.
I think also the other point is not all, but all the publishers really seriously want just one single solution. So I think in the short term, of course, if Google roll out the Privacy Sandbox, I still think the other ID solution still can continue to survive. Because as I said, some of the publishers, because of the revenue interest conflict, they may not just choose one solution, Google. They will continue to use other solution, the UID 2.0, because it's now a more recognized solution in the programmatic area. And from what I've seen from some of the examples that I was shared last year, they did a lot of progress already. So I don't think that publisher would give up a solution which has already progressed just because Privacy Sandbox is going to run. And in the past, we all see that, remember the GDPR rollout, it was very surprised to all of us. All of a sudden, midday at night, Google just turned off. And no one knows that whether we do the same with the Privacy Sandbox. So I think publisher will still give like a plan B in case that the sandbox is running out. There's still a plan B that they can still run the revenue.
Yeah, that's true. And I think you made a good point there with regards to GDPR, because I would imagine that a lot of eyes will be looking to the European regulator now and how they may enforce GDPR more strongly. Because updates in the second half of this year to, you know, ongoing situations such as the TCF will be really interesting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, will regulators kind of step in where the tech companies, so far the biggest enforcers of privacy regulation, have to a degree maybe stepped back, or at least Apple has. And then, you know, from there, we'll go back onto the advertisers, and they're waking up to the fact that to reach the best users and devices, they really need a different way of working. And then we go back to what you're talking about again with, you know, the general public. You know, is this a bad thing for them? You mentioned that they are very wary of data security and privacy for a good reason. It took us time to get there, because I think sometimes we live in our bubble and we're very much aware, but the regular Joe blogs on the street in different regions is very much more removed. But yet their personal data, as kind of legals define in the third party cookie, is now, it's going to be continually at risk for many years to come, which I think is, you know, it's such a shame. So like these kind of third party cookie or personal data that Google and others, you know, push out and broadcast to thousands of different users or actors, some of which are not good in nature, perhaps, you know, what if we went to the public and asked them to have their say, to vote, what would be the response, do we think? Would it be that they, you know, they would kind of look for a different browser away from kind of such control and autonomy?
I think the sort of main thing that they'd say is stop being bombarded with cookie notices on every single website every single time they visit it. I think that's that's the most kind of forward facing. Obviously, you do have a lot more consumers who are a lot more aware of privacy. But I think by and large, people just want to go back to a simpler way of browsing the web.
Keep it simple, right?
Exactly. I totally agree there.
Brilliant. Okay, well, let's move on to our second story then, which is about Meta seeing revenue decline for the first time. I can't imagine there'll be many people getting their tissues out for this. But anyway, so Meta's total revenue fell 1% in Q2, making the first year-on-year decline in the company's history. Total revenue stood at $28.8 billion, lower than the $28.94 billion anticipated by analysts, and ad revenue fell from $28.58 billion to $28.152 billion. Now, despite the number of ad impressions displayed across Meta's properties growing 15%, the average price of an ad has risen by 14%, thanks to lower demand and Meta's meek revenue forecast for Q3. It is believed another factor behind the decline in Meta's continued pushing of short-form video service Reels, which apparently is yet to become as monetizable as the company's other ad inventory. Some might say it's a clear attempt, shall we say, to replicate the success of TikTok. Reels has grown, but apparently it has also alienated some Instagram users. So when I say it's grown, users spent 30% more time on it this quarter than they did in Q1. So the move has yet to yield further ad revenue, with some advertisers reportedly struggling to adapt the new format. And according to Bloomberg, some Meta staff have unofficially asked some advertisers to test video ads on TikTok and bring the most successful ones to Reels. Cheeky, but, you know, why not? With that in mind, Matt, do we think Meta's focus on building Reels will pay off?
It could, but I don't think the way they're doing it is the right way to go. I don't think there's any harm in trying to emulate what TikTok is doing. Obviously, they're growing at such a rapid rate, which for technology companies is quite a rarity in this market. Like you said, in terms of user numbers, it's working to an extent. But the way it's absolutely annoying users of Instagram, I think, is not the right way to go about it. Mm. In an interview with CNBC, TikTok's Blake Chandley hit, I think, a very strong note by saying Facebook is a social platform, we are an entertainment platform. Instagram is still a phenomenally successful image sharing site, so why try and fundamentally change that into a TikTok-style app? I can see a use case for Facebook being a kind of portal to Instagram and possibly a standalone Reels app. Also offering routes into like their gaming and marketplace channels, but forcing Reels onto both Facebook and Instagram, it smacks of desperation to me. I think, you know, looking at if you tried to put in Reels on WhatsApp and force users to scroll through loads of video algorithm swill before they even got to the message they wanted to read, WhatsApp would die a death very, very quickly. So trying to shoehorn that into Instagram, where people just want to look at photos of their friends or people they follow, now they have this, you know, the random algorithm generating. I think they should have just tried to create Reels as a standalone app. Since the start of 2021, Meta's lost $16 billion on its AR/VR division that is desperately trying to force into this, you know, outdated / some say dystopian view of the metaverse. Mm. I think some of that $16 billion revenue could have been used to create a new app. It's not that expensive to make a new app, really.
Fair enough. Janine, what do you think?
I have a very similar opinion.
So, oh, no, come on.
No, similar, not the same. So I think Instagram, Facebook, I would see the same, that this is a more social platform. This is less entertainment platform in compared to TikTok. But we all know that the user experience become more video first. So I think this is a very logical move that Facebook try to make either Facebook or Instagram to be more video. And the easier way is, of course, Instagram, because there's already discovery, there's already stories, which are more video-like. I think one thing that we always need to bear in mind that for advertiser, there's two marketing. One is advertising, the other is content. TikTok is very, very strong in content. And it has a very high engagement rate in compared to the Instagram. But I have to say, we did A-B testing last year between TikTok and Instagram. If we talk about advertising campaign, TikTok did have a very cheaper CPC, and also I'm talking about the video, the short video versus Reels, and and it's like the CPC is definitely cheaper with TikTok short video against the Instagram Reels, but the traffic is not high quality, meaning that the people do not really stay really long. Our website, our conversion rate was low, so I think in Instagram they did because the content. They learned a lot how to do content more to drive commercial, which is not the current advantage of TikTok, because TikTok even has problem to bring in e-commerce. So I think if really Meta want to do real in a successful way, they need to think about how to integrate e-commerce more to push it beyond what TikTok can do right now in Europe and also US. Because they start testing the live shopping in UK, TikTok. Mm-hmm. However, it was not successful, therefore they need to stop. And even in Germany right now, there's not really big news whether they are going to roll out e-commerce at all. So I think the battle is not about video format. At the end of the day, I think the battle is about how you leverage Instagram Reel against TikTok in order you get more in the e-commerce area, because this is the area that I think it is more worth for them to move in if they will.
Yeah, that's true. And I believe their TikTok are quite successful out in APAC, for example, with the e-commerce side. It goes to show different regions and different consumer behaviours how one product will just not fit all globally. But also, I think, Matt, you alluded to it in terms of the business element. Meta execs told investors that they were making progress in replacing ad dollars lost as a result of Apple changes, but said it was being offset by the economic slowdown. But then they added that Reels is increasingly inserting into users' feeds to compete with TikTok and was now generating over $1 billion annually in revenue. Having said that, Reels, it's cannibalizing more profitable content that users could otherwise see and will continue kind of to be a headwind, I think, in profits through 2022 before eventually boosting income. But it's that balance of being in the right place at the right time and providing, you know, the right information and format, understanding why consumers are on which platform. And I think, you know, if they're under pressure, I don't know if that's kind of fallen down the priority lists, and they just kind of need to reevaluate. And Matt, like you said, should it have just been a standalone app? Not that expensive, but I can only assume when people talk about it upsetting Instagram users. I saw a quote that it was Kylie Jenner, apparently, said, make Instagram Instagram again, please, and pleaded a post which was reshared, you know, by her, that stop trying to be TikTok, because, you know, people are on a certain platform for a certain reason. But maybe it's greed. I don't know. Maybe it's keeping the investors happy. But I think we're just going to have to kind of wait and see how things progress over the next 3 to 6 months. Because no doubt they've got something up their sleeves, right?
I mean, I quite agree with you. Somehow they need to earn the money to invest in Metaverse. So as Reel is at the moment the only product, they definitely invest in that. But I think it is that they need to stop thinking about just copying, but leverage their grant, their fundamental advantages. They have a lot more reach. They have more data. And they have an older audience. I think this is something that they need to think about to integrate in the product instead of just copy directly what TikTok is doing.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And actually, it leads us on nicely to our third story, which is about TikTok apparently building a music service. So it's believed that they're in the process of creating their own music service, and Business Insider reported that the ByteDance-owned company have filed a trademark application for TikTok Music, which could be applied to an app that would allow users to listen to, share, download, and purchase music. Now, music is already a big part of TikTok, and the platform can be fundamental to a song's success, with I think it's something like 175 of the tracks that trended on TikTok last year made it into the Billboard 100 chart. So parent company ByteDance operates a music service called Rezo in Brazil, India and Indonesia. And that grew 19% year on year in H1 2022, and which is, it's understood, will serve as the format for TikTok music. So taking that into consideration, the service would allow TikTok to make money from popular songs, potentially posing a threat to incumbents like Apple Music and Spotify, who some would say previously benefited from TikTok's users' desire to listen to trending tracks. However, other users have been included under the trademark filing, meaning that it's kind of unclear whether TikTok music will replicate its competitors' models entirely or in part. And this, you know, what you were just saying, Janine, they need to perhaps look, or Meta should look at creating something rather than just copying. So now are the tables turning and we've got TikTok potentially copying? I don't know. I mean, what do you think, Janine, when, you know, you look at TikTok as a music service and, you know, what potentially could it mean for advertisers, do you think?
I think it is very hard to copy right now. So I think their success is really based on that. They can make music successful overnight just because they have a very highly engaging community. But streaming music belongs of a lot of commercial models behind, like subscription model. And also TikTok come from video first business. This is not audio first. And in the audio first business, is the sound quality very important. Other like Apple and also Amazon, Apple and also Spotify invest money in lossless and also spatial audio, which is at the moment definitely not the key investment of TikTok. Meaning that if they TikTok really want to move to the music, they need to invest a lot for advertiser. Meaning that I'm going to need to pay a lot to cover the investment. And the second also for advertiser, we all know that audio is listening, so most of the case is also driving and also doing other work. And TikTok is more interactive. So it is for me now a secret how they try to move the interactive element, like comments and sharing happened on the more audio format. So this is unclear for me. But for advertiser, I think it's attractive. It's because they push really like billboard nice music. But I think for me it's a big question mark, or is what is the value for me?
Yeah, that's a good point. Matt, what impact could it have on competition in the audio space, do you think?
Yeah, I think I agree with Janine. It would be very difficult for them to spin it up into like a Spotify or an Apple Music. I think TikTok's play here is about data. I think obviously currently people are watching TikTok videos, hearing music they like, and then they're leaving the TikTok ecosystem to listen to it on other platforms. Having, you know, a TikTok music standalone service, but still within obviously its ecosystem, to retain those users, retain that data in terms of what people are listening to, is sensible. And, you know, considering it's already got, you know, what's essentially a fully working beta version in Rezo, you know, 19% year on year increase is solid, not necessarily spectacular, but I think solid is all it needs, just as long as it retains those users within its ecosystem. And then obviously, you know, you've got the data from that music side of things, leveraging it that onto all the millions and millions of signals you're getting on that short form content. I think that's where that appeal would come into advertisers.
Yeah, I'm curious. I mean, I think there's good points there in terms of the video versus the audio. But then when I was digging around this particular story, I came across a piece that ABBA's Benny Anderson and Elton John have worked together on a new song mashup for TikTok. So they reportedly performed a live rendition of each of their songs before they were blended in the TikTok audio app. And already the audio has been used in over 54,000 videos on the app. So I'm like, that to me kind of think, I think, wow, are they onto something here? You know, how are they going to monetize that? I don't know. But obviously there is an appeal, and that blend, there's something in it. Or am I just, you know, caught up with two songs from the 70s that I like, and I'm showing my age.
No, so I think it's going to be hugely, you know, TikTok, its kind of main selling hook at the moment is that kind of, you know, really short form discoverable content. You're able to be so creative with the content compared to, you know, even, you know, the likes of YouTube, you know, production values on that are going up. It's not the recorded on a shaky mobile phone camera that it was back when it started. So, you know, to be able to have that, you know, be able to use tracks like that, and that will obviously make those tracks more popular. Yeah, in terms of the content side of things, it's definitely appealing.
Do you think they're trying to close the loop there in some shape or form, Janine?
I think they try to be, Matt mentioned a very good point at the beginning, they try to be entertainment platform. And they are actually. So I think it's a very logical that they use the music to close the loop. So you see it's video and you listen, it's the audio. So it's totally logical. I think what is interesting is to see how they start to monetizing it. And it's a thing about there's a lot of artists see the advantages, how fast they can distribute their music across TikTok overnight in a very short time. I think this is very appealing for them to start with the artists. And I believe that they were going to charge quite a nice sum of the licensing. Or they will say there's always a licensing distribution between the artists of Apple and also with Spotify. And they may use that pinpoint to try to attract most of the artists to start. I think they may start, they may not like start like Apple Music or Spotify that has a subscription model. They may start to charging the artists first, and later on, if it becomes a success, they may start to charge the subscription model. And then it'll be very interesting to see how far they can go. Because if you take a look at the streaming business right now, subscription model is no longer that very substantial in terms of business right now.
Yeah, it's difficult. There's too many subs. People are tight on money. You can't subscribe to everything. Maybe I think I saw something though where perhaps the call to action would be, oh, book and see Elton John playing at a venue near you. Because I think they've done in the UK maybe an integration with Ticketmaster or something, or probably not just in the UK. So that's perhaps one element. They might get a kickback from that. Who knows? Again, it's watch this space. But that leads us on to, in terms of watching the space, would like to kind of move into the second part of our discussion, and that's finding out more about Honor, and in particular what you've been working on. So for the benefit of our listeners, I've got a few questions that I'd like to ask you, because you've been doing some really interesting work. Perhaps you could just set the scene by explaining, you know, what Honor is and what you do for our listeners. Please.
Yes, sure. So Honor is a global smart device provider. We are active in 100 countries. 2 years ago, we made the decision we want to move away ourselves from the mid-price segment and into a more premium technology segment. And therefore, last year, we were very much focused on transition in R&D, in the people. And this year, we start scaling up our business in Germany. Scaling up business is not just just about scaling up the sales channel, but also scaling up the product that we are going to offer to consumers. Because we scale up the product that we're selling, meaning that we have more different target groups. So it becomes more complicated to find out what is the right target group, what is the right tone of voice, how my message should be looked like across the customer journey in order to drive conversion, especially in this very uncertain economic time. So therefore, I start working with our agency together to define a kind of blueprint to run different A/B testing to see what kind of messaging, what kind of content are really interested to a different target group of our different product in order to drive conversion. So we just at the beginning, as I said, you just start. At the moment, we very focus on running the campaign in the social media because it's a very high scale reach where we can use more data to generate insight. And most of the tests are really very focused on different data signal, the creative motive, and also the length, and all based on different hypotheses from our creative and also media agency.
Wow. There's a lot going on there. So in general, you know, how's it kind of been going so far? And in particular, I think our listeners would like the honesty in terms of what challenges have emerged and how have Honor kind of overcome or adapted to them.
I think like running A/B testing is always mostly recommended by agency and also consulting firm. I think the biggest challenge is really how to bring the people on the same table, on the same page. Because you think about creative are always very romantic and they love like storytelling. Mm-hmm. And where the media agency want, I need to hit my KPIs. Otherwise, my advertiser would not like me. So it is really about the balance between like one love to talk about storytelling and the other want to have a KPIs. How we try to connect these two great ideas together to define the hypothesis that we can test. For instance, like in the creative content, what the agency believe the best way to convert, we need to discuss with the agency how we can really make it happen. And so there's a lot like communication and also fine-tuning the way that we think what should be the outcome to drive conversion.
Okay. And are you able to kind of share how the results perhaps have varied across various channels?
Yeah, so we last year we ran a product launch campaign and in December, where actually normally in December the CPC is very high and also very difficult to compete. And now we run another product launch with very, I would not say similar targeting, because we the first step we want to test out the tone of voice and also messaging. And as we run at least 16 different creative motives and also length. At the end, we see a significant increase in the significant increase in the CTR, meaning that we drove more traffic than before. It is at least it was very surprising. It was like 7 to 8 times more traffic, and also the CPC have this significant increase by 80%, and it's very impressive for us all because creative agency always say that just have a beautiful story, then you are in a non-length, then you are going to be very successful in social, where the media agency always say just keep it short on Facebook and Instagram because no one care. But at the end of the day, it was not true. At the end of the day, it's really very depending on what content really matters at what length. So it is really worth that for every campaign that we run, we should run with a different set of length and also with motive in order to generate, have enough data to reach the KPI.
Wow, really valuable insight there. So where do you go next? What's next for Honor's marketing strategy then?
And we will start. So we start moving more into programmatic. So the next campaign will be in Q3, definitely. And we are going to implement more attribution modeling capacity, because we start, as I say, we start ramping up our business, meaning that we start using more channels, especially in the e-commerce, where we still need to find a solution to attribute our medium budget better across the channels. So it'll be the next things. And therefore, the cookiness discussion is very important because in attribution modeling, we definitely need a solution. And IDs and cookie used to be very, very important for the attribution modeling. So, and therefore, we're looking forward to see and test out different tools, which one will help us to get at least a bit more holistic measurement.
Wow, and I'm sure there's plenty of listeners out there that will welcome the opportunity to talk to you about it in more detail, how they might be able to help you. But on that note, we've run out of time, but please allow me to thank you so much, Janine, for taking the time out to talk to us and being open and honest about what you're doing within Honor as well. We look forward to keeping an eye on you and watching you go from strength to strength. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for the great discussion.
And Matt, as always, thank you for your contribution.
Thank you, Anne-Marie. Always a pleasure.
So that's this week's MadTech Podcast. Thanks for listening.